This is an ABC podcast.
For copyright reasons, the music has been edited. To hear the full tracks, listen to The J-Files, Thursday nights on Double J, or head to doublej.net.au and click on the track list at the bottom of each episode.
Hey, it's Kaz Tran here. Welcome to The J-Files, a podcast for people who love music. Each episode is like a quick music history lesson. We pick a different artist or band. We look at some of the most important moments in their career, and we celebrate their impact on music, all in less than 30 minutes. On this episode, it's Boy and Bear, the Sydney indie folk outfit that had its start as a solo outing but evolved into a full-blown band, winning over a devoted fan base right around the world.
So you keep the world at bay. You keep your secrets and your scars. But you've been weathering the storm, and it's been blowing hard. 'Cause it won't wait for you, because it waits for no one.
When singer-songwriter Dave Hosking uploaded his tune The Storm to Triple J Unearthed in 2009, he could not have imagined where it would take both him and the musicians he'd recruit for his band.
So won't you keep from the beggars of bones, for the night comes to bring them home. If they manage to keep safe skin, they'll call.
When Boy and Bear uploaded another song, Mexican Mavis, to Unearthed, it got a short, sharp review from Richard Kingsmill. "I think this is brilliant. Simple as that," Kingsmill wrote, giving it 5 stars. While the band was creating a buzz in the industry and fans were clamouring for more, their catalogue was small but perfectly formed. Here's Boy and Bear's Dave Hosking and John Hart reflecting on the early years when they talked to Triple J in 2019.
For the first song that we ever released, which was Mexican Mavis.
Yeah.
We played a show at Spectrum in Sydney.
At Spectrum, yeah. It was sold out.
It was.
I was personally quite nervous, but like in a good way.
We didn't have any management or agents or anyone in the industry working with us at that point.
We were as green as you could possibly imagine.
Yeah. We had no idea what we were doing.
To the point where we played the headline set and I thought we nailed it. I thought it was really good. And then it was afterwards that we were having a conversation with a prospective booker at the time.
Yes.
And what did he say?
Yeah, I think he told us, "Guys, that was really great, but seriously, you can't do a headline set that sold out that lasts 22 minutes.
Yeah.
And we had to say to him, we didn't have any other songs. Like, we played our 5 songs and that was it.
One of the interesting challenges of having Triple J pick up this song, it was like, great. And it's like, we should do a gig. Great. This is amazing. Tick, tick, tick. And it's like, oh shit, we haven't got any songs. So if you want to be in this industry, make sure you write enough material to get you to at least 25, 30 plus. Okay? That's our tip. That's Boy and Bear's big tip.
By the end of 2009, Boy and Bear had chalked up more wins, picked by Unearthed as winners of the Homebake competition and getting ready to record their eagerly anticipated debut album. Dave Hosking joined Lindsay McDougall on Triple J to reveal their plans.
On the phone, we have Dave Hosking from Triple J Unearthed J Award winners, Boy and Bear. Dave?
Lindsay, how you going?
I'm good, man. So what's going on? What's going on in Ireland?
In Ireland?
Are you still in Ireland?
We are, yeah. We're in Dublin at the moment. We head to Manchester tomorrow. It's been pretty sweet. It's been bloody cold. It's been snowing for the last 4 days.
Can I say congratulations on winning the J Award for Triple J Unearthed Band of the Year?
Thanks, man. Thank you so much. Yeah, we're completely over the moon. It was a pretty nice way to end the year, to be honest. You guys have been so good to us, so we're stoked, man.
Well, you've been pretty damn good to us from Rabbit Song through Mexican Mavis and the EP. It is just, yeah, it's such a tough decision as well. You know, Triple J Unearthed has so many great, amazing music on it and so many great success stories. So for you guys to come out ahead, it was awesome. Now, where were you guys? Were you in the UK when you found out?
Yeah, where were we? We got into Belfast on Sunday. So we were in Belfast when we found out, I think unfortunately on a fairly dreary boat on the way over from London. I think we managed to get ourselves into a pub fairly quickly and have a few celebratory beers on the other side, as you do in Ireland.
It's a perfect place to celebrate, Northern Ireland. Beautiful. But when are we going to see when are we going to see you guys back in Australia?
When do we get back? We get back on the, I think about the 11th or the 12th, where we do the Falls Festival runs. And then, so we'll get Christmas at home, get a little bit of summer, and then head off to the States early next year to start the record.
Exciting. So recording in the States.
Yeah, Nashville, actually. So, yeah, really exciting.
Wow, that is very exciting. Have you decided who's going to be turning on the amplifiers for you?
As in producer-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can say, I'm just going to say it, worst-case scenario. It looks like we're doing it with a guy called Joe Ciccarelli.
Awesome. That is great. Has he done the Shins and stuff? I'm just trying to think of...
Yeah. He did Wincing the Night Away with the Shins.
Brilliant.
And he recently did The Strokes, and he's done a bunch of amazing records. So we're pretty excited about the whole thing, to be honest.
Good stuff. And we'll see that sometime in 2011, one hopes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll try and get it moving as quick as we can. I think it always takes a little bit longer than expected, but hopefully mid-next year we'll be able to release it.
How's that for a scoop? Dave Hosking there telling the doctor that Boy and Bear would soon be working with famed producer Joe Ciccarelli. Around this time, Boy and Bear were picking up some other influential supporters. Artists like Mumford & Sons and Fleet Foxes were spearheading an international indie folk scene which welcomed the Sydney newcomers with open arms. Mumford & Sons took Boy and Bear on the road, as did other folk rock royalty like Angus and Julia Stone and Laura Marling. Here's Boy and Bear's John Hart explaining how Laura Marling set the blueprint for a positive touring experience.
The beauty of being a support band for, you know, an artist is you get to sit, if you choose, and watch their set every night. And you sort of, we got to see her on at least, I think it was, I can't remember the number, it's three or four tours we've been out with Laura now. And the first major one we did, I remember sitting there the first night and I thought, oh yeah, that was all right. And then sort of the second night I was like, wow, there's something really something going on here. And then sort of halfway through the tour, I was watching the set every single night and I was just completely, I just found her really compelling as an artist, both on the record and having, you know, then spent some time listening to that in the tour bus and also seeing her each night.
And I'm clearing all the crap out of my room, trying desperately to figure out what it is that makes me blue, and I wrote an epic letter to you.
Yeah, she's just somebody who really delivers so consistently and she's really easy to be around on the road as well. And I think we sort of took that as a bit of an example of, you know, when we start to take bands out ourselves on the road, you know, really to make them a part of things. And the whole touring experience can be really quite communal. And it's something that I guess makes it a bit less isolating, because it can be a strange thing going from one city to the next playing to strangers. But when you've got friends around, it really makes it an awesome thing. And it takes, I guess, it gives a bit of normality to things, yeah.
She seems like someone who's an incredibly old soul as well. She always seems like she's been, you know, born out of time, a woman well beyond her years.
That's the irony, isn't it, with Laura Marling? Because I think she's about 21. She might be 22 now. I don't want to be doing an injustice to her. But I think she always said, you know, I'm the oldest person on tour when she was on the bus. Like, she's like, I'm like your auntie or whatever.
I was saying to John on the way up here, Laura's kind of like the loveliest, scariest person I've ever met, because she does. She has that sense of, you know, being so far beyond her years, and she's only 21, I think it is, and it's pretty mind-blowing. She's a real talent.
And you don't want to play any sort of word game with Laura Marling, because she will beat you.
She strikes me as a bit of a word nerd.
She loves Scrabble. That's her passion on the road.
The last time we saw her was in London when we had some shows, and she came along, and afterwards we were playing Scrabble in a pub. She's got a set that she carries around with her, and you can play this speed Scrabble thing. So it's a bit of a specialty for Laura. I think.
Speed Scrabble in the pub.
Yeah, great.
Well, you guys really know how to rock out.
That's how we roll.
Boy, behind the road.
Oh, I remember sitting back on my balcony. I wasn't listening to the Rolling Stones. See, I was waiting for my dad to come home from work so I could show him all the chords that I'd learned. See, I was under the impression I was gonna lead some kind of simple, understated life. But now I'm living.
longer a band with just a handful of tunes under their belt, Boy and Bear released their debut album, Moonfire, on August 5th, 2011. Moonfire changed their trajectory and became the soundtrack to our lives, with three songs placing in the hottest 100 of that year. Bands are often in a bit of a stressful spot following up a breakaway success like Boy and Bear had with Moonfire. Here's Dave Hosking talking about how they in fact felt more pressure with the first album than its follow-up.
I think the first record, there was a lot more pressure because we were on the cusp of potentially making a career out of this, which is every young musician's dream.
Did that surprise you at the time? Was that a situation you'd imagined or...?
Look, I think as soon as we got a sniff early, I mean, I'd been wanting to do this personally for a really long time, and we had some really great Triple J support on an earlier song, which I did on a solo EP, and I think as soon as we got anywhere near it, I was just obsessive to make sure that we worked really hard and that we made the right decisions and we took the opportunities that came to us. So I think by the time we got to the first record, as much as there was pressure around it, we'd been fairly driven for a long time.
There's a wonderful thing in your music that is that combination of something which is accessible and sweet, but against a very strong personal narrative. There's a story in your words.
Yeah, I think that's something that we stumbled upon, particularly on this record, is having or really embracing some traditional pop structures and embracing some pop melodies and the good old-fashioned chorus, but also countering that with some slightly darker lyrical content or just honest lyrical content. I think that's what I wanted to do. When you've got the music and you've got the story, you can play around. They don't both have to be heading in the same direction. You know, you can have really upbeat music with more somber lyrics and vice versa.
All the more interesting when perhaps they don't.
Yeah, 100%.
Counterpoint.
Yeah.
Dave Hosking there telling RN's Jonathan Green how Boy and Bear swerved a sophomore slump with Harlequin Dream. That album again did really well, taking the number one spot on the Australian album charts and winning a nomination for Australian Album of the Year at the 2013 J Awards. Harlequin Dream was recorded in Boy and Bear's hometown of Sydney. When it came to recording album number three, Boy and Bear once again looked to high-end studios overseas and another big-name producer. Here they are talking to the music show's Andrew Ford about how Limits of Love was made.
It was a bit different to the way the first two albums were made, wasn't it? It was sort of old-school stuff, live to tape.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we got to work with a great producer, Ethan Johns, and he's a living recording legend and musician. And
name some names that he's worked with.
Oh, guys like Ryan Adams and Ray LaMontagne and
Laura Marling,
Kings of Leon, Kaiser Chiefs,
and his Tom father Jones. Glyn Johns was around at the beginning of recording rock and roll.
Right,
and so he's either had first hand stories or second hand stories of pretty amazing.
It's in the
things.
Blood.
In the blood, and he recorded this way. He's been recording to tape and live in the studio since the beginning, and really encouraged us to do this.
And this is in Wiltshire. This is in Peter Gabriel's studio.
That's right. Yeah.
Now, what difference does that make? Actually, first of all, what difference does it make? You know, recorded your first album in Nashville. Mm. I mean, do these places have sort of magical associations that kind of end up on the album in some way, or is it just a studio?
I think Nashville had a few negative associations for us by the end. That was a tough 6 weeks, but it was also our first album, so it was a real learning experience. I think that the thing about Peter Gabriel's studio that set it apart from all the other studios I've ever worked in personally is it had natural light and it was in a beautiful surrounding, so it was conducive to work, and we loved being there.
You kind of felt like you were just on this little waterway, because as you looked out and that's all it was, just water surrounded you, so it was quite relaxing space. So
Limit of Love once again landed Boy and Bear at the pointy end of the mainstream charts and marked a change of creative direction. Up until now, songwriting duties had fallen solely on Dave Hosking. Now Boy and Bear were writing as a collective and breaking out of their mould with a bit of instrument swapping, as they told Triple J.
Yeah, we mixed it up a little bit more this time. Usually in the past I'd kind of written the main collective of songs and then we'd fleshed it out as a band, and then this time around we tried to write songs, I guess, from scratch as a group, which was fun, and then occasionally got bored and jumped on the wrong instrument and often played badly for most of the period of time, but occasionally struck some decent stuff, which turned into the album.
That's incredible. It must be a terrifying moment in this, you know, rehearsal space, everyone picking up an instrument, looking around at each other and going, G first, F sharp.
It's usually lubricated with a little bit of alcohol and some food and, you know, Dave Hossing on the keyboards and, you know, doing some jams.
I think a lot of time is wasted too, because, like, you know, if I jump on the drums, as soon as I get any sound out of it, I start thinking, actually, I'm actually not bad at this instrument. and when you've got five people on the wrong instrument, that's kind of what happens for the first hour, is people are just overplaying, thinking they're doing something half decent.
Yeah.
But is it a situation where maybe, you know, you've learnt too much in the instrument that you're good at and you kind of let go of all the rules and you can just, you know, you're not worried, oh, is this the right transition or anything like that? You just do what sounds good instead?
Yeah, like I think that you get into sort of a bit of a pattern of doing the same things over and over again. I know, like, I play the drums, and like Killian wrote a couple of the drum parts and so did Dave Symes, our bass player. Like, I've just been doing the same things now for probably 18 months. So it's pretty good to break me out of the mold.
As well as writing their own beloved songs, Boy and Bear had spun songs by other artists into new shapes, including tunes from Amy Winehouse, Chris Isaak, Empire of the Sun, and very recently, Simple Minds as well. But the first cover they really put their stamp on was a song by the Finn Brothers that you'd be pretty familiar with.
Whenever I fall at your
was a massive song for them, placing at number 5 on the Hottest 100 of 2010. They got to perform it at one of the biggest and best nights for regional live music fans, the One Night Stand, which was made all the more special because of who they got to share the stage with.
It was pretty amazing. It was pretty amazing on multiple fronts, really. We obviously got to share the stage with Bernard Fanning, which was a pretty special experience. I know Killian particularly had been a big... had a big love affair with Bernard since he was a teenager. So.
I had to get out in the open at the start. Like, when we caught up the day before the festival, I just said, you know what, I just need to get it out in the open. I'm a big fan. Now we can get on with the set, all right?
So you had your moment to freak out.
I had my
out.
Moment. I gave myself 10 seconds and that was it.
So describe that feeling when he's walking out on stage with you. Are you in the moment or are you still a bit like, holy shit, that's Bernard Fanning?
That moment was hilarious because he just owned it so hard. He walked out playing Shaker.
Yeah.
And, like, no one could even hear it, but it just looked so great.
I thought it was quite a reminder for me of how not rock and roll we are. Like, we're more folk. And he just came out and I was like, okay, that's good. That's how you do it. You know?
Yeah. And what was the crowd's response like? Because that would have been quite a moment for them. Like, Boy and Bear's on stage. Bernard Fanning's just walked out.
It was massive. I mean, everyone was cheering and going crazy. And I think for a lot of people, it's been a while since they'd probably seen Bernard play, particularly his own stuff or even from back in the Powderfinger days. So there was quite a moment. You could sense, like, the elation, I guess, really. And the next few songs we played, everyone sort of was there singing along. It was great.
Playing 2016's One Night Stand alongside Bernard Fanning was just one of many great highlights on a road very well travelled for Boy and Bear. What we weren't aware of at the time was that frontman Dave Hosking had been going through some intense health challenges that left him exhausted and in severe pain. That condition was called chronic dysbiosis, a situation where there's an imbalance in the gut bacteria. Aside from gut pain, Hosking's vision was affected, his ears were ringing, and he was getting full-on headaches as well.
Here he is talking to Richard Kingsmill in 2019 about when he first experienced its symptoms.
The first kind of symptoms were about 2011. And I guess every year it just got worse and worse until eventually I was really in a pretty bad way and lacking a lot of functionality, both cognitively and physically. So, yeah, it's been a tricky period, but it feels like, you know, I've come a long way in the last 18 months particularly, and it feels like I'm heading back in the right direction, which is good.
Absolutely. I mean, the funny thing about, you know, having health problems and physical health problems is the effect that it has on your mental state as well. And were you just asking so many questions along the way as to, you know, not just what was causing it, but mentally you must have been going, you know, is it something wrong with my brain?
Well, I mean, I think at some point I just assumed it was. I mean, that's what doctors were saying to me, that it was psychological. And so I just kind of jumped through all those hoops. And I think it was probably about 12 months later when we were touring overseas, and I remember a gig in Paris where I could feel like a definite kind of lag effect happening in my mind. And then eventually when the ringing in my ears started, it sort of, as much as that was quite full on, it was also a moment of going, okay, I now know this isn't psychological. This is something else is going on here.
When you were going through the worst of it in the last sort of 3 years, were you getting any ideas down for songs at all?
No. It was interesting. I mean, particularly leading up into the third record, I had really minimal output. And then after that, I think at its worst, it was, I mean, on one level, it's kind of fascinating that I'd pick up the guitar and I'd want to play, but I might play some chords and sing some melody, but I'd forget it instantly. I couldn't, it was like my recall and that part of my brain just couldn't keep up. And so for a while there, I didn't play because it was too confronting and too frustrating.
And Dave, when you did start feeling better and sort of coming back into the picture of writing material,
Yeah. The
first lyrics that came, can you remember what sort of came into your mouth or into your brain?
It was interesting because I'd started working with the guys again in kind of mid-2017, but the first kind of real, there were kind of pockets of little lyrical hooks, but nothing substantial. And it was 2018, and it was the back end of a song called BCS. And that was the first moment where we were kind of working that song, and I just started to, for the first time, I could feel words and language starting to come into my, to be able to use them essentially. And it just felt, it was really exciting. It was nice to kind of pick up the pen and paper and not be terrified of it, but just kind of going, okay, this is how it should be. This is work, but it's much easier than it has been. So yeah, that was a good feeling.
It was a long, crushing silence. I guess it was always inside us, exposing an emotional violence, the type that takes over despite.
That's BCS, a track taken from Boy and Bear's 2019 album Suck on Light, the first song that started to take shape once Dave Hosking had got through the toughest parts of his chronic illness and was getting his songwriting sense back. Suck on Light was a great return to form, especially for Dave Hosking, who is now healthy again, and the whole health ordeal gave him plenty to write about.
I sort of came to the realisation that, well, the record was inevitably going to be about the kind of health struggle that I'd had. I think it had to be. There was nothing else to really write about. And then the challenge was how to do that in a way which had light and shade and could show different perspectives. And because in amongst the struggle, there's also been some really profound lessons and discoveries and moments of celebration and just interesting reflections, I guess, on what our minds are capable of. And but that was definitely something that was on my mind and on our minds going forward, was that to be able to create something that isn't super heavy and, yeah, to just provide those different perspectives on the situation.
It's been so fantastic to reflect on the amazing story of the rise of Boy and Bear and some of the incredibly testing times they've been through as well. All the while, the band has always given us thoroughly thoughtful music. Remarkable, really, given what we know now about what Dave Hosking was going through right throughout it all. They are in a good place these days and are in the thick of writing more new music for us, so this is a really great thought to hold on to until we are gifted with that new music. The J-Files is a Double J podcast. Make sure you like, follow and share. Our producer is Sam Wicks, with production support from Gab Burke and Phoebe Bennett. Theme music is by Art vs. Science. You can check out Double J anytime on the Triple J app or at doublej.net.au. I'm Kaz Tran. Thanks for listening.